This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Danielle from Hertfordshire, and I'm nearly 10 months sober now. I was probably what you'd call a grey area drinker. I didn't drink all the time, but when I did, I didn't really have an off switch, and it just left me feeling low energy, low motivation, and just not really an optimal version of myself. I joined the OTI community after listening to the awesome Over the Influence podcast for quite a few months, and I've never looked back. There's Zoom calls every week on different days. You actually get to see Shaz and Ben, which is so exciting, and make that kind of community a reality and really come to life. I would highly, highly recommend joining the Over the Influence community. It was the game changer for me to feel connected in sobriety.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's absolutely fantastic to have you listening. If you are joining us for the very, very first time and you're thinking, what is this podcast all about? Well, basically, in a nutshell, we sing about sobriety. We have been there, we have done that, and in my case, been sick down the t-shirt many, many times. To give you a quick recap as to who we are, chatting to you about all things alcohol-free, my name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Everybody calls me Shaz or Shazar. I decided to take a break from alcohol. Oh, crikey. September 2018, I used to be a daily drinker, started in my teens, obviously in my 20s, went through to my 30s, and that's when it really started to ramp up. Ended up being a daily drinker. A bottle of wine became the norm in the evenings, and then I would ramp it up at the weekends. I just thought it was getting a bit boring and slightly problematic. So I thought it was time for a change, time to try a break from booze. To cut a very, very long story short, that was 3.5 years ago. It has been the best thing I have ever done, hands down. If you are sober curious, just give it a go. Just try it for 100 days. You won't regret it. So that's me in a very large nutshell. I don't do this on my own. And one of the other brilliant things about alcohol-free life is that I got to meet Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, my name's Ben. I live in Liverpool. I'm 33 years old. I am 2 years alcohol-free in July. And it all happened by accident, really. I took a break because I started producing this podcast called Over the Influence. Freddie and Shaz, as it was back then when we started, were banging on about how great alcohol-free life feels. I thought, I've got to give it a try. And it was just, look, a long story short for me, it was, I very quickly saw the benefits of giving up alcohol. I'm hugely passionate that you don't have to have a rock bottom to reevaluate your relationship with drinking. I want everyone to give it a try. I want everyone to try 100 days at least alcohol-free, 100 consecutive days, because that's when I really started to feel the benefits and the changes. I am engaged to Jem. I am a father-to-be. I've got a baby arriving in October.
Yay!
Got the 20-week scan tomorrow, aww, which is all very exciting. And I honestly don't know if I'd be in this position if I'd not knocked booze on the head. You know, I didn't think I had a huge problem with alcohol, but looking back and being nearly 2 years alcohol-free, I can see that life was going the wrong way for me. I was drinking not for fun, but because I was stressed. And honestly, best decision I've ever made is to knock it on the head and give up booze completely. Shaz, can't wait for today's episode. This is actually a guest that I brought to the table for once, because you're our guest booker. But I'm
Ben, I'm chuffed to bits that you introduced today's guest to me. Thank you so much. And Jane, before we get into who you are and what you do and why you're talking to us today, it's taken us months to organise this, hasn't it? It's taken us a long time. So welcome to Over the Influence. Thank you so much for your time today. We'll find out why it's such a busy time for you. I'm delighted to welcome Jane McKenzie. Jane is from Shrewsbury. Have I got that right? Shrewsbury?
Yes, Shrewsbury.
Thank you, Jane. in the introduction, obviously, we're very upbeat and we are singing about the joys of sobriety. But our chat today to you is going to be slightly different because that's simply not always the case. Alcohol addiction can affect so many people in so many different ways and impact on families. And there's a reason why we're going to talk about the work you're now doing in that area. I'd love you to introduce yourself to us, please. Tell us who you are, and then we'll get into a bit about why this is so important to you, Jane.
Okay, sure. First of all, thanks very much for having me on the show and being patient. And I think I've sort of had to cancel a couple of times, so thank you. So I used to be a Shropshire councillor, so a local politician. About 3.5 years ago, I set up a charity in Shrewsbury called Share Shrewsbury, which was to support anyone affected by alcohol addiction. And the reason I did that was because, like so many people, I didn't think about alcohol. I didn't think about addiction. We as a family sometimes had a drink. None of us were heavy drinkers. And so it was something that passed us by until my daughter began to have a problem with drinking alcohol. And this became worse gradually over the years. Her name's Amy. And we became aware that actually she was addicted to alcohol. And as a family, we knew nothing about it. We made lots of mistakes. We didn't really get any support. And it was because of Amy's battle and struggle with alcohol addiction that I decided to set the charity up in the first place. Unfortunately, 10 days after we launched the charity in Shrewsbury, Amy quite suddenly and quite shockingly died. We didn't expect it. She was drinking alcohol, but she had made the decision to go into supported living and to turn her life around and was feeling quite optimistic. So for us as a family, it was shocking, terrible, and the grief was awful. Amy had been helping me at that time to organise a comics art festival in Shrewsbury. And she was very good at all that sort of thing. And in fact, that festival took place days after she died. So it was all quite traumatic and difficult for me to pick up the pieces of the charity. But I did do that. And I became quite passionate about all of the injustices and all of the reasons that Amy died unnecessarily. And as a result of all of that, I've wanted to turn this tragedy into something positive. And this is why I'm putting on a conference, which actually is tomorrow and Friday. And it's called Alcohol Sharing the Truth, because I feel that alcohol is something that everybody accepts. It's a drug that's legal, but it's one of the most destructive drugs known to man. It's a toxin. We as a public aren't really told the truth about alcohol. Amy didn't have the right support she needed to get into recovery. And certainly as friends, as her family and loving her, we weren't told how we could support her. So the conference that I'm holding now is really to give her a voice, even though she's not here anymore, to speak out and talk about these issues and see if we can stop someone else from dying unnecessarily, like Amy did.
Jane, we will talk much more about the conference a little bit later on in our conversation, because it's absolutely fantastic what you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing that. Would you mind taking us back a bit further and telling us about your daughter Amy and when it became apparent that her relationship with alcohol might become problematic?
Yeah, it's difficult to know really when it started, although looking back, I think when Amy was at school, particularly sixth form, she was beginning to drink. And we did find out sometimes she missed lessons and went out drinking in the afternoon with her friends. But like so many families, we just thought it was a phase that she was going through. She was a bit rebellious. She was creative, a bit different. We just thought she'd settle down. And we didn't really pay too much attention to it until it gradually began to take over her life. She went to university, but she failed to graduate, which, of course, was another warning sign. We never really got to the bottom of why that happened, but drink must have been involved with that. She had a job, intermittent jobs, couldn't keep them. She moved in to live on her own. And now Amy was an extremely gregarious, outgoing girl. She was magnetic. She drew people to her. She loved being with people. But as this disease took a hold on her, she started to isolate herself. She would, as you probably would know, she would drink and keep bottles, store them around the place, hide them. All of the things that now, working with people with alcohol dependence, I recognise. But at that time, as her parent, I didn't really know what was going on. And there were no support services for us. So we very often did things that probably enabled her with her drinking because we didn't understand the right thing to do. I feel really strongly and passionately that friends and family need to have a voice because this truly is a family disease. It's, to me, it's, I think of it like a wrecking ball that it just destroys everything within range. And I know that with alcohol, I didn't understand at the time, but it took control of her, and it was the most important thing. She didn't want it to be, but it just basically had her around the throat and dragged her down. And again, as a family, we eventually got some support in a friends and family group. But we were given advice that I don't agree with now. So we were told to let her reach rock bottom. We were told to stand back, to let her make mistakes, to let her in effect suffer. We didn't realise, of course, that for Amy, rock bottom was her death. So I understand now that really early intervention is where it's at, not just with alcohol addiction, but with just about everything. And even though Amy was in denial almost to the end, that is no reason why you shouldn't start to try and work with somebody. Things like the Blue Light Project. One of my speakers at the conference tomorrow was one of the founders of that. That's why I wanted to bring these people into the conference who could talk about the things that we as a family didn't know, and to give this information to the public. Also, alcohol is treated as a fun thing. It's how you celebrate. It's how you recognise achievement, how you mark occasions. And yet alcohol brings so much pain and suffering if you do become dependent on it, that there's a message that the public's not being told. Then we're not being told the truth about alcohol, which is why we've called the conference Alcohol Sharing the Truth. So there are lots of messages that this conference has, and we have people in recovery speaking as well, which obviously is very important. But Amy, we gradually realised, but also, you know, we normalised a lot of her behaviour. I realised that looking back, the times that we found her collapsed, the times we had to get an ambulance to take her to hospital. I've seen her, I've witnessed her having a grand mal epileptic fit on at least three occasions. And how we didn't think that we had to make an intervention to have the conversation with her, because she would always defer everything. She would deflect. She didn't want to talk about it. She would block us. She would not talk to me. She would ignore me for days if I tried to address this. And as a parent, I may not have put it in the right way to her. But it is a terrible disease. It isolated her. It took away all her friends. It took away her family. She missed so many important events. And she was very unhappy. I know about that. But alcohol was king. So we had a very painful learning curve. But I do think that we let things go and we accepted things that we shouldn't have done about her behaviour and the suffering that she was going through. I mean, Amy would, when she was physically dependent, of course, so many times she tried to detox. The local services could never give her support with detox. In fact, I remember on one occasion she went to have a meeting with local services and said, I need to detox. And they said, well, you're not drinking enough. If you were drinking more, You know, you're only on 35 units a week. If it was 40, we have a rule, you know, you have to be on 40 units. So she said, Mum, they've told me I need to drink more. And yeah, I know it's killing me. It's making me ill. So this happens all the time. It's still happening. I've even heard it today, this sort of misinformation. So again, I wanted a conference that brought in experts from all around the world who actually said, no, actually, this isn't right. This is the way you should support somebody. Amy never got the chance of rehab. So we used to try and work with her to detox at home. I learned about reducing alcohol units each day. And if you went too fast, the impact on Amy physically was so severe. She suffered so much. The headaches, the vomiting, the shaking, the memory loss, the blanking out, it was pretty well agony. And I don't know, I just think that there isn't very much sympathy for people in that position, because we didn't understand that alcohol addiction was a disease, was a progressive fatal disease, and that unless you addressed it and could get somebody into recovery, the result would be death. And I think that was one of the reasons that Amy was in denial. If she'd been told it was a disease, it's just a disease, you know, it could be diabetes, it could be anything else, but for you, it's alcohol addiction. And of course, if there was any other disease that killed more men in Britain under 50 than anything else and was the third biggest killer in the world, there would be experts and services and departments. There would be places you could go and get support. But of course, because it's alcohol addiction and there's so much stigma and misunderstanding, the services are pitiful, woefully inadequate. I work with people every day who just don't get this. Either no support at all or very little support. We don't even recognise this as a psychological disorder. And yet we know that the addiction, the principal organ affected is the brain. So Amy never got to see a doctor. She saw her GP and a liver specialist, but they don't talk to each other. And to be honest, it's a pretty of a disaster. So I just want to try and have a conference, start the conversation with the public, because in my opinion, I used to work politically in London in Parliament, and until you can convince the people with the money, the people with influence, the decision makers, then really that's not going to filter down. And whilst we just don't care about people dying from alcohol addiction, then the people in power aren't going to care either, and there won't be funding. So we've got to start making a noise. We've got to start stirring it up. We've got to start bringing the power of all of the people affected by alcohol addiction together to start to try and change things. And I'm just talking and talking, so you'll have to stop me. Sorry.
No, Jane, it's amazing. You are, from your personal story, the tragedy of what happened to Amy. We say these things over and over again on this podcast. We talk about early intervention. We talk about how you don't need to have a rock bottom to change your drinking. In fact, I won't say which guest it was, but I had a bit of an argument, didn't I, Shaz, with a guest who last year said, you know, you need to have a rock bottom you know, you need to feel real pain to make a real change. And I kind of went, hang on a sec, you know, I know we're supposed to have nice open conversations here, but I disagreed with the man, and I had to tell him that I disagreed with him. I'm not sure how much of it I edited out. I got quite cross with him. And you know what you're saying about the decision makers and making a noise, I'm sure you saw the story last week about people getting, I think the title was Pissed in Parliament, you know, it was people passing out, junior researchers, not, you know, not necessarily the MPs themselves, but they've got bars in Parliament where they're, of course, the drinks are subsidised.
There's so much
that you're... The whole no sympathy thing, this is something that I've been going on about for ages now. Since someone pointed out to me, and someone actually, one of our community members, Maggie, has put in the chat box here that the blame is put on the person and not the alcohol. You know, there's this highly addictive substance that's marketed to you every single turn with a very small label on there that says drink aware. But even that label, even those words say, oh, well, if you can't, you might get addicted to this thing. A small percentage of people get addicted to it, and that's really sad for them. But if you can't handle it, you didn't drink aware, did you? Like, it puts the blame on the person, not the substance.
It does. And with any other condition, we wouldn't say, wait till it really hurts. Wait till it gets so bad.
Oh, I can't believe it. And was that professional advice?
That
Jane,
is so, that yes. so upsetting.
Yes. That was a worker in the sector, in drug and alcohol sector, in local services, that gave us that advice, told us to step back. So Amy, who was desperate it was as if she was drowning and she needed somebody to reach in and help her. She was out of her depth. She couldn't save herself. But we were told to just fold her arms and wait basically till she almost drowned. And then she'd probably be ready to start the hard work of recovery. I just think that it's shocking that that's still said. And again, the coroner, because Amy had to have a post-mortem and we had a coroner involved, and he told me that Amy had made a lifestyle choice. And I could have, you know, I was so angry because nobody chooses to be vomiting, to be have this distended stomach, to be bleeding out, to be having fits, to be having a miserable life, to be cut off from their friends and family. We know where alcohol addiction goes. It's a terrible, terrible descent into horror and eventually death. Nobody chooses that. So to have a coroner say that, who you would expect to be more educated, who is dealing with alcohol deaths all the time and increasingly so, for me was quite shocking and just shows how ingrained the stigma and prejudices in this society to make moral statements, moralistic statements like that about somebody suffering from a disease over which they've got no power and somebody who would love to be free of it. So,
Jane, where do you find your strength from as a mum, as somebody that wants to make change? You know, you speak so honestly and so painfully. It's about Amy and the story. You should never have had to go through this. Amy should never have had to go through this.
No.
How do you do it?
You know, well, I must say that for the first 2 years after Amy died, I couldn't have done anything really. And I did have some therapy to help me through the grieving. You just learn to live with it. But now I just feel like I'm channeling Amy's energy, actually. I had an interview with BBC Midlands Today, and they wanted to do it on the third anniversary of Amy's death, which was Sunday, just gone. And they said, well, if you don't want to, we won't. We understand. But actually, I kind of almost felt, no, I want to do this. This is for Amy. This is, you know, this is what Amy would have wanted. She was very feisty. She was a Labour campaigner. She didn't like injustice. And I just feel that I'm sort of almost channeling an energy so that she can have a voice. And so that I'm just so angry that we need to change things. I'm so disgusted that the drinks industry takes no responsibility for the ruin, for the death and the devastation that's caused by encouraging people to drink a toxic substance and not warning them. In Shropshire at the moment, well, I have to be careful what I say, but let's say I've been told by someone working in the field that there is no prevention work now with children. Now, if we're going to have early intervention, you need to be doing prevention work with children. That's absolutely crucial. So where do you start? It's the service is collapsing before we even start. And I know most of that's to do with funding, but it's also because we just don't care as a society. Because if we did care, people would be rallying round and they would be demanding that money was spent. And yet alcohol affects every class, every age, every layer of society. Most dependent drinkers are in full-time employment. Talking to the liver consultants in our local hospital, they say we have young women, successful businesswomen coming in with liver failure in their 20s. Please, can somebody talk to people, to the public, before it's too late? Because a lot of these young women, particularly because their livers are smaller and more vulnerable, we can't turn it around for them. And they didn't even know they were ill. So it's not only about people like Amy who took years and slowly spiraled down. It can also hit you quickly. We have a responsibility towards the public to be warning them so they can make judge, they can judge and make informed decisions about keeping themselves safe. I mean, we know 80% of people with alcohol dependence don't seek help. It's just, you wouldn't have that with any other condition. And of course, a lot of that is to do with shame and fear, mothers thinking their children might be taken into care, or that people thinking they'll lose their jobs, all of these concerns. So we need to, again, society needs to have a more sympathetic and supportive attitude towards drinking. It's a problem that's been created by the alcohol industry, and also I would say national government, who ought to be playing a major role in public awareness. If they can do it for smoking, so that smoking isn't cool anymore, and that cigarettes are put in plain packaging, I think alcohol should be packaged plainly with warnings on it.
Absolutely. Did you see, Jane, the research from the University of Stirling that came out last week on exactly this subject?
No, well, they've I didn't.
Done some, so they've done research saying if alcohol was labelled in exactly the same way that cigarettes are labelled, it wouldn't necessarily stop people who are already drinkers from drinking, but it would make it unattractive to young people. And it reminds me that when Desmond Tutu died last year, lots of different, you know, inspirational quotes that he'd said going around the internet. There was one, there comes a point where we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they're falling in. And I love that quote. I think it's an amazing quote. And the University of Stirling has said, if we label this correctly, which I think correctly, you know, in a sense of this is the harm that alcohol does to you. If you put that, rather than just a small drink aware label, if you put this is the effect of alcohol, and this is what alcohol can do to you, it would discourage young people from starting drinking in the first place. And that's got to be the key, isn't it?
It's got to be part of it, yes. I mean, for me, drink aware, I don't know anything about drink aware, but to me, that's paying lip service to put a tiny little sign and saying units. People don't really understand about units, and they don't really care about units, I don't think. About 30 years ago, I know that the drinks industry realised they had a big untapped market, and that was young women. Perhaps it's longer ago than that, but they were selling beer, they were selling whiskey, they were selling spirits, but the female market, particularly the young female market, wasn't particularly buying into that. So that's when they started to develop alcopops, all the lovely bright colours, sweet drinks, names that make them sound like sweets and so harmless.
Glamorous ad and campaigns.
Yeah, to draw in that wonderful young teenage market, which they've now got, and which they exploit. And you can see with gin now, so many different sorts of gin, all flavoured.
Oh, it's also beautiful. The bottles are so fancy. Yeah. And if it's pink with glitter, oh, you'll just buy it.
That's right.
And what you've just described there, Jane, is exactly me. I fit into that age bracket from, you know, X amount of years ago, starting with the Alcopops onto the flower gins and all the rest of it.
Yeah, you know, and it also very sweet, which is also bad for you as well. But, you know, I talk to people now in my family and I say, well, you do realise that alcohol is toxic, it's a poison. And they sort of look astonished, as if to say, well, a glass of red wine's okay, isn't it? You know, that's what we've heard. But we need to say it as it is. I mean, I'm not totally abstinent. I do sometimes have a drink, but I know the risk. And that's all I'm saying. The public needs to know. And I definitely think we should put plain packaging out there and warnings like we do. So, you know, cirrhosis of the liver and all this thing. Let's have some pictures on those bottles. Let's make the drinks industry say it as it is.
Absolutely. I think that it's, we always, on Over the Influence, we don't berate somebody for drinking. You know, if someone chooses to drink, that's fine. We choose not to. But that's exactly it, isn't it? It's about letting people know the information in the first place and what it can, like you say, sharing the truth about alcohol. Hi, this is Ben, and we're just going to take a quick break from this episode with Jane. Not to tell you about our merch or to tell you about the benefits of joining the ATI community. Today, we'd just love you to visit the Share Shrewsbury website, which is shareshrewsbury.org.uk. That's shareshrewsbury.org.uk. We're about to talk to Jane about the fabulous lineup of speakers that she had at the Alcohol Sharing the Truth conference. If you email shareshrewsbury@gmail.com, You can request a link to watch them all back. And as you're about to hear, there were some wonderful, wonderful speakers at the conference. So please do email shareshrewsbury@gmail.com to request that link. Right, back to the episode. Talk about the conference, Jane, and some of the speakers that you've got coming to is it in Shrewsbury?
Well, it's virtual, so it's being filmed in Shrewsbury. Recorded, videoed in Shrewsbury, because one of my trustees runs a digital media marketing company that has a TV channel, business channel. So they're supporting me with the delivery. It's going to be extremely professionally delivered. And so they suggested that I should do this and that they would support me. And my first job was to get these speakers. And it has taken a while because I targeted speakers that I wanted. For example, I wanted the National Recovery Champion, Dr. Ed Day, to speak. He's just presided over the new drug strategy that came in a few months ago. So I wanted him there to be talking about that.
What is the new strategy?
All that I would say is, so it's supposed to be putting more emphasis on recovery, which is great. And it's talking more about the fact that there should be dual diagnosis, because obviously there's the physical side of addiction, but addiction is a mental health condition as well. And that's something that needs to be, the two need to be supported together. Although, of course, we know mental health services are very difficult to get. It covers illegal drugs and alcohol, but I would say, in my opinion, there's too much of an emphasis on funding and support, or rather not enough emphasis on the support for alcohol. My keynote speaker tomorrow morning is Dr. David Nutt, who was the government advisor on drugs. And you will probably know then, you may have even interviewed him. He got famous.
Not yet, Jane. In fact, have a word, would you, tomorrow when you get a chance?
I will.
Yes, please do. I'm currently loving his book, Drink. It's fabulous.
Yes, it is. So he's already pre-recorded his slot tomorrow. But he was famously sacked because the government wanted him to focus on things like crack cocaine, ecstasy, and those illegal drugs. And he said to them, well, look, hang on, there's an elephant in this room and it's alcohol. Alcohol's killing 100 times, if not more people than ecstasy or all the illegal drugs put together. We need to be, as a government and a country, looking and focusing on alcohol. And they sacked him because that wasn't what they wanted to hear. And we know the drinks industry has a massive lobby in government, massive influence. And the gov seems to me the government and the drinks industry wants us to carry on drinking. So it's going to take a lot to change their mind. But coming back to the conference. So Ed Day is a addiction psychiatrist. These very rare creatures that you never ever see. Well, I think we've got 3 or 4 of them speaking at the conference. We've got Marcus Heilig, Dr. Marcus Heilig, who is of this generation, the most cited addiction psychiatrist in the world. He's the guy who led a study of MRI study of the brains of people suffering from addiction and has proved that alcohol addiction changes the structure of the brain. So this, he puts addiction, he's able to place it as a disease, a physical disease, not a lifestyle choice, something that needs the correct support, services and treatment to help people turn around. And a lot of these changes, as he will also demonstrate when he talks tomorrow, are reversible. So we've got Dr. James Morris, who's talking about the language that we use, the stigma and prejudice. He's done a lot of studies into how society treats people with addiction. And his presentation will be very challenging on how we perceive people. The whole us and them, the whole old guy sitting on the park bench with a brown paper bag with a bottle in it and making us see that actually it's us. It's about us and our families. And we need to address the stigma that we have. Of course, Adrian Childs is speaking about his personal recovery, well, his personal relationship with alcohol. Camilla Tominey is talking about her struggles as a child growing up in a home with an alcoholic mother. We have some very powerful recovery stories. We have an AA ambassador talking about his sort of terrible descent into to alcohol addiction that nearly took his life, and his climb out, and how it affected his family. His son also became addicted to alcohol and committed a very serious crime. So that's a very compelling story. We've got Viv Evans, who's the chief executive of AdFam, speaking about friends and family, because that's very important to me, about how we need to support and how we can support someone we know or care about who is suffering with alcohol addiction. We've got Lauren Booker, who is a national expert around working with businesses on looking at their HR policies and their alcohol policies to allow them to be more supportive of employees who are suffering. Because again, people struggle and then they get sacked. And so she's worked with the biggest companies in the country and internationally, companies like BT, the Royal Navy and others, in developing policies to support employees and to enable them to disclose that they've got issues and get support and retain those employees. Because, again, we know statistically that people in recovery make the best employees. They make the best of everything because they want to give back. It seems to be part of it. So she's going to be talking about the reality that these are good workers. We need to support them. So we've got businesses speaking as well. I'm missing out some of the major people because my mind's gone a little
Jane,
bit blank.
Jane, don't worry about it. you've got an incredible number of people being involved, all coming together for this one reason. What do you hope to achieve? What would be your goal to get out of the conference?
That's a really good question. I think for one thing, I want to start the conversation with the public. I want to for people to start coming out. People are hiding, not just people suffering with addiction, but their friends and families. We have a whole army of people. There are hundreds of thousands of people out there who are suffering in silence. And I think they should have a voice. If we can give them a voice to talk to government, to talk to their local MPs, to try and bring about some change and improve services, if we can start that process. And I'm so delighted because we've got over 400 people now who are coming to the conference from people working in the sector, NHS workers, friends and family. We've got expert researchers. We've got businesses, we've got all sorts of people. And this is what we were doing as a charity before COVID. We were having public meetings in the centre of town. Let's talk about alcohol addiction. And people were just coming from, again, a whole disparate group of people. And we were just having conversations to start detoxifying the subject, if you like. So some of our speakers, I know, will want to carry on supporting what we're doing. And So that's one aim, is to start the conversation. But really, I'm a campaigner. I would like to start working with other alcohol charities to start a campaign with the government and to try and start to bring about some change. Some of the things I've talked about calling the alcohol industry to account, to look at changing the labelling, to look at putting warnings on bottles and educating children as well. I mean, they're just a couple of things. It's something that's going to take some while, but we've done it. We've started to do it with smoking. We need to do it with alcohol.
You've got our backing, Jane.
Thank you.
Yeah. With you.
Jane, I want to ask you if you have come across or met yet another guest we've had on the podcast called Sarah Drage. Now, Sarah lost her dad to alcohol several years ago, and she now campaigns very much like yourself to eradicate the shame and the stigma attached to it all. From everything you've told us today, it would be wonderful to put you in touch with Sarah, because I think I think you'd both get on, and I think you're on a very similar path with what you're wanting to achieve.
That would be great. And I've met people too in developing the conference. So yeah, I'd love to get in touch with her. There's people like Susan Laurie who's speaking.
She's
at the conference.
She's been on the pod. Susan. We love Susan. She's
in fact, Susan will probably be listening to this because she listens to every episode.
In fact, I saw Susan shared a link to the conference on social media a few days ago, and I got really excited because I commented and I said, well, we've got Jade on the podcast. Susan came on, I think, in series one. And her story is so important. Oh, Ben, wasn't she wonderful?
Mm. Yeah, Susan Laurie, the author, from Rock Bottom to Sober Forever.
Yes, she is a lovely person, and she is such an ambassador. She speaks straight from the heart, and she's I love her as well. In fact, and she's so approachable. We did a webinar for Shropshire Council because they're sponsoring us, not with money, but sponsoring us by putting the message out and helping us with that. We did a webinar for their staff on alcohol, and she was great. Yes, and Phil Zachary, who is the hypnotherapist who brought her, who gave her, who enabled her to reach recovery, he's speaking at the conference too.
Brilliant.
Because I thought, right, I want him as well. And I rang him up and we had a great chat and he agreed to come on because I'm really intrigued by his methods. Because we do tend to think recovery is a long, grueling, slow process. But for Susan, it was almost instantaneous. She says she's not in recovery. She's got no desire to drink alcohol. Yeah. So Tim is going to speak at the conference about the methods he uses. And he's also going to do a conversation in the lunchtime interval, a conversation with our presenter about what he does, the methods he uses. So he's going to do two slots on the program. So whenever I see somebody like that, you must do the same, who you think has got something fresh and new and exciting, I just want them to speak at the conference.
Thank you for telling us about the conference. I think lots of people will be requesting the link to download those videos. So we'll put some of the information in the episode notes of this podcast episode as well. Go back and if you get to the end of this one, you want to listen to some more, go back and listen to Susan Laurie's episode. She tells us the whole story and just how she'd been looking for something to. She didn't think that she would be able to ever shift her dependence on alcohol, Susan. But then, like you're saying, this method just completely changed her life. Completely. You know, her book is From Rock Bottom to Sober Forever. And it just completely revolutionised. So that's one that I'm definitely going to be watching.
Can I just Please tell you a couple more speakers. So John Ashworth is speaking, the shadow work and pensions minister, but he was shadow health secretary. He's speaking live as well, although he's such a busy man, and he wants to give his story about his father suffered with alcohol dependence. So he grew up with a father, and he has a story, personal story to tell about that. But he's also going to be talking about national policy from his experience as health secretary, what he thinks we need to change, how things need to be different. And we've also got a whole section on something called Operation Courage, which is the veterans, Armed Forces veterans. They have obviously a lot. There's a lot of veterans have issues around addiction, and particularly alcohol addiction. So we have speakers talking about working with veterans. And Operation Courage is a collaboration between the Armed Forces and the NHS to support veterans. They're running a workshop for us as well. So if there's any army vets out there or armed forces vets, there's something in this conference for them, because they're another group that they won't ask for help. It's very difficult, and coming out of the armed forces is so difficult. Again, a culture where you've got to drink more than other people. If you're in the Navy, then you're given alcohol rum ration anyway. How can it be, you know? We need to change this culture.
I'll tell you what, Shaz. I'm not surprised that that Jane kept cancelling us. She's been busy, isn't she?
Very busy.
Getting this conference together.
It's absolutely incredible. Thank you so much, Jane, for chatting to us. We wish you the very best of luck with this event. And I know myself and Ben will be getting in touch with regard to watching it back. It's going to be life-changing. It's amazing. Before you go, I want to ask you about your daughter, Amy. And I want you to share with us, if you wouldn't mind, how you remember your daughter, Amy, before alcohol took a hold as a young woman.
Oh, right. Well, so Amy was the golden girl. She was a beautiful girl. She was always the centre of... There were always kids around who wanted to be with her. She was very funny, very witty. She was very... unpredictable. She was somebody who, as I said earlier, was magnetic. She drew people to her. We loved her company. I loved her company. She was a bit like a soulmate to me. We did a lot of things together. There's been a real upsurge from her friends when she died. They couldn't believe that she could be gone. Amy was creative. She loved to make things. She was artistic. She was kind. She was very, very special. And you know, she's missed by so many people. Our life is poorer without her here.
Jane, thank you so much. Yep.
Hello, this is Ben. Just wanted to say thank you ever so much for listening to this episode of Over the Influence. As I said earlier on, we're not going to flog our own stuff today. We just love you to request the link to download the different talks that happened at the Share Shrewsbury Conference, Alcohol Sharing the Truth. You can do that by emailing shareshrewsbury@gmail.com. And also, we'd love you just to have a think about what could you do in your life to help share the truth about alcohol. Are you in a position at work? Do you work in a HR team? And maybe you could look at the HR policies. Do you work in a marketing department? Could you give a talk at work? Could you write something? Could you, I don't know, have a think. What can you do to help share the truth about alcohol within your own life, in your own networks? Thank you once again for listening to Over the Influence. We'll be back again next week with a Young and Sober episode with Charlie and Joey. And me and Shaz will be back the week after with another fabulous guest. Thank you.